I'm Candace Michelle, and welcome to another episode of Our Community. One of the prerequisites of knowing where you're going is knowing where you've been and knowing where you are currently. In fact, I think it's almost impossible to plan for the future without consideration for the events that formed the past. One of the examples of that is the current state of the port of Brookings Harbor and the legal and personnel issues that are plaguing it. What is the real story? And how did we get to this? It's my hope that by interviewing some of the people who helped create the past, we can discover the truth about the present and plan for the future. My guest today is Jim Rulliford, who has been down at the port on an almost daily basis since 1993. Hi, Jim, and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So you have been at the port since 93, basically.
I have. Actually, probably a little bit later than that. I've been in Brookings since 1992, late 92.
So where did you grow up and how did you get to the Brookings?
I won't go back that far. My memory doesn't go back that far.
Because it's eons ago, right?
Yeah. But I spent ancient history. 25 years in Portland with and my wife and I decided we used to come down here fishing almost monthly.
Really?
Wow. A long drive, but we loved it here. So we would come down here and go fishing. And we finally decided I had a consulting practice up in Portland. And we decided that we would just do it. So we folded the practice and moved down here.
Consulting in what area?
IT and business management.
Okay. Great. Mm-hmm.
And I had done that for many years. So we moved down here and we bought a little farm out on Cape Farello. And we got tangled up with trying to be gentlemen farmers.
And so we spent gentlemen and lady farmers.
2.5 years out there proving that you can't make any money raising chickens for a living. Or you can't make any money raising cattle for a living. But you have a lot of fun, but
yes.
You can't make any money.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
At the end of about 2 years, it was time for me to go to work. So
I'm sorry. I've done been, with the gentleman I've farmer.
Been, I am.
Yeah.
I loved every minute of it. We kept the farm for 10, 15 years. Mm, we enjoyed it.
Nice.
But I've also loved my work. Mm-hmm. So it's not like going to work for me to,
right.
to consult. So one of the very first places that I called on to let them know that I was in town and what services I could offer was the port.
Hmm.
And I met Russ Crabtree. I met Merle Melhoff, who was the chief accountant at that time. And that's basically, they were just in the process of thinking about upgrading their in-house computing system. They mm-hmm. didn't have networks back then. That was a long time ago.
Right.
The internet wasn't even around at that time. So I got involved with them at that point, helping them to decide on a computing network, helping them to install it, a new accounting system. From scratch back in 95. That would have been in basically in 1995, I think.
So did you design that accounting system?
Well, I designed the original accounting system,
okay,
yes.
Interesting. Because I don't think QuickBooks was around at that point,
no.
Right? Yeah.
No, we at that time they had a what was called a mini computer system, which didn't lend itself to their kind of an environment. So we went to PCs, mm-hmm. network PCs. Mm-hmm. And I believe about a year later is when we installed our first QuickBooks installation.
Okay.
It was brand new installation. Mm-hmm. So that was my first engagement with the port. And since then, basically I live at the port and I have for the last 12 years. My house is right across the street from where the Blue Water Cafe used to be.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's a little
okay.
blue house that's on the hill there.
Aww.
So I look out over the port, and I have for at least 12 years now.
Yeah.
And I usually have had one, most of the time that I've been down here, I've had two boats in the port, a sailboat and a fishing boat.
Well, I remember your sailboat. Right. I don't think I saw your fishing boat.
Shillelagh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Beautiful sailboat.
Oh,
yeah, that was sweet.
It's, you know, it's one of those difficult decisions. When do you tell yourself it's time to hang it up?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And
yep,
it was time to hang it up. So Anyway, I was at the port taking care of my babies, my boats, mm-hmm. every day. I lived at the port so I could overlook it. And then my business was at the port. I established an office there about 7 years ago. That we started off with, in partnership with Leroy Blodgett, not long after we started the Salmon Derby.
That was so much fun, those slamming salmon derbies.
It was. Yeah. And it's nice to see people having fun.
Yes.
That's what people view the port as, is something. I hear that a lot, that it's a place to go to work mm-hmm. if you have a job that lends itself to earn money from the water mm-hmm. Or from tourists mm-hmm. Or just to be at the port.
Right. Have fun. And
that's... It just is a fun place to be.
Right.
And I've never gotten tired of it.
No.
I still don't. I still live above the port and look out every day and bellyache and moan at the current management because they're not keeping it up.
Yeah, as normal, I know.
But, I didn't mean that, but
that's all right. That's just, yep.
So anyway, that was my first engagement. I became friends early on with a gentleman by the name of Jim Booley. Jim was also a business consultant, and he had recently moved to Brookings. So we got together, and the port was looking for some kind of direction of how to move forward. And we thought we might be able to help them. So we jointly took on the first engagement for a strategic business plan. It was needed because the old docks that were in the sport basin were rotted away. They were wooden docks, and they were unsafe. You couldn't walk on them. So we had a loan for $2 million, something like that, that the USDA was going to make to us so that we could put all new docks in the sport basin. But we couldn't afford it. We couldn't afford the monthly payments mm-hmm. on the loan. So we had to come up our charter, Jim and my charter was to come up with one as a strategic plan as to how we could afford it, how we could pay for it, and two, how to meld that into a longer term strategy as to where the port should be 5 years from now, 10 years from now.
So were you hired by the port to yes. come up with this strategic plan?
Correct.
Okay.
The two of us. We were mm-hmm. you know, right. we were separate companies, but we collaborated on
it. And you were not on the Port Commission at this point.
This was in the mid-90s.
Okay.
And we did. That's when we first came up with the mission statement for the port. I created that mission statement as a part of the strategic plan. Jim's forte was procedures and tactics, how to move money to where it might be more advantageous, mm-hmm. what things to do administratively.
Right.
And mine was procedurally and how to use the computer, you know, to help.
Right.
I think about it now because you hear the county saying, commissioner saying over and over again that we need to find revenue. And the port people are saying the same thing. Well, that was exactly the same issue that we had back in 1995 and 96. We had to find revenue mm-hmm. in order to support the docks. Mm-hmm. If we didn't put new docks in, we lose all of that dock rental, the moorage rental, which is a major part of the port's revenue streams. So we came up with a plan that wasn't very popular, but the board did vote on it and approved it. And the plan was that we would increase the rates, moorage rates, by 5% per year, every year, for 6 years. And that was a big step.
Yeah.
Big step for people who hadn't had a rate increase in 20 years.
Ah, okay.
The commercial fleet felt that they were really taken advantage of. Uh-huh. They got a 25% discount on their moorage rates. And they still do. They still have a 25% discount over the recreational boater.
Okay.
But still, to commit to a 5% increase, in effect compounded every year for 5 years, 6 years was a big step, but it paid for the docks.
And really, it was the only way you were going to.
Only way it was going to happen. And Otherwise, that they would have had to remove the docks and remove all the boats that were moored there, mm-hmm. which were, the port has usually about 650 or 700 boats.
Really?
350 or so are in the sport basin.
Wow.
And roughly 300 over in the commercial basin.
Okay.
So it's a big number, mm-hmm. Revenue-wise.
Right.
So that was.
So was there pushback from the lot. Yeah from the boat owners?
Yeah, and I had to present it. I remember very well. I was over at the fire department, and the room was loaded up with great big burly fishermen,
unhappy fishermen,
waiting for me to tell them how they were going to increase their rates 5% per year.
Jim, did you bring a guard with you or something?
No, I'm Irish. So I'm too dumb to remember that stuff. So. But anyway, that was one of the first times that we really got involved in mm-hmm. that kind of an issue was mm-hmm. strategically, the plan then said, we have to look at every revenue stream that we have. It needs to be market-driven, not old crony-driven mm-hmm. as to how we charge for things.
Mm-hmm.
Moorage, property rentals, land rental. At that time, there was no charge for pot storage.
Oh.
Right now, the storage crab pots take up acres mm-hmm. of land. There never was a charge for that till 2008. Never a charge. Huh. They could store whatever they wanted. Mm-hmm. Equipment storage, there was mm-hmm. no charge for that.
Huh.
Well, you can't run a business that way. So through several iterations of meetings with each individual commissioner, we came up with a mission statement. It very clearly says that the mission of the port is the economic development of the port district. And it goes on to elucidate why and how.
And what the port district is what?
The port district is an artificial boundary that goes across Pistol River to the county line to the east and down to the county line to California.
Okay.
State line to California.
And that is a considered a special district?
It's a special district. Okay. Most people think of the port district as being the 43 acres that are down on the water. And that's only a very small piece mm-hmm. of it. So I didn't realize that until we started researching, you know, the laws and, mm-hmm. and that. And we realized that, hey, the responsibility of the port commissioner actually goes quite a ways beyond what's on these 43 acres down here at the water. We have a responsibility for the economic well-being
of the whole district.
Of Brookings.
Yeah. Wow.
That's part of our responsibility.
Wow.
Of all of the people that live on Cape Carpenterville Road and Cape Ferrello Road and mm-hmm. all of those places, we had a responsibility to provide economic development for that district. That was my view.
Right.
I was able to convince some of that.
That's a completely different, I mean, I just, you know, I'm trying to wrap my head around that because that is
it's
not.
It's a different animal.
It's yeah, it is a completely different. Okay.
So that's. I took that at heart before I ever thought about running for commissioner. That mm-hmm. was when I was consulting with the port. So I consulted with them. So did Jim. Jim's son, Tom Booley, lived back in Virginia Beach, Virginia at the time. And he was young and wanted to get into the computer world, and Jim prevailed upon me to take Tom under my wing and teach him this industry, and which I did, and he became my partner.
Excellent.
And he still is here in town and an excellent IT individual.
Great.
So that's Jim finally passed away a couple of years after we got involved in that engagement.
Mm.
One thing that it did do, and I won't belabor it anymore, but it did prove to me that there's value in planning. Even if you are a political subdivision, if you're a county, if you're a city, if you're a special education district, if you don't have a plan, a written, articulated plan, then you're not going to go anywhere. And particularly when you're dealing with an elected body,
mm-hmm.
because that management schema can change.
Yeah, so quickly. And consistently.
Consistently.
Yes, and so, consecutively. So yeah.
If you don't have that plan voted on by the elected body and approved mm-hmm. and direction given to the executive director to implement it, mm-hmm. then you've wasted $40,000 or $50,000 on a plan. Because it won't work.
Mm-hmm.
It has to.
Now, was this the first plan that the port had?
It was the first one in many years.
Okay.
Prior to 2007, which is when I ran for office, the commissioners at that time, they were running, Lloyd Whaley, who I ran against, was a 20-year incumbent.
Oh, okay.
He had been in office for 20 years. John Zia was a commissioner at that time. He'd been in office for close to 20 years. Ed Gray was an 18-year survivor. Ken Burtis was about the same.
Mm-hmm.
So there's very little turnover mm-hmm. in the commissioners for years
mm-hmm.
Prior to 2007.
And certainly, I can see some of the benefit of having somebody who's been around for a long time and they kind of know what's worked in the past and what hasn't and that. But if you don't have some new ideas and new blood and, you're kind of going in the same circle then.
Well, as I'm a firm advocate for term limits. I believe that two terms in elected office is plenty for anybody. Unless you have a clear mandate for something that you proposed, to continue to hold office just to be holding office, first of all, two things happen. Your staff, you get too close to the staff and staff doesn't feel like they need to clear things with you. They feel like they know you well enough to do things that
right.
they want to do on their own.
Right.
So there needs to be a separation between staff and the commission. It's a tough lesson for young commissioners to learn that they don't manage anybody directly. None of the employees report to them, except the director who reports to three of them.
Oh.
The director does not report to any one commissioner.
Oh.
The director reports to a quorum
okay.
of three commissioners. So,
that's another interesting perspective. So the staff doesn't actually report to the commissioners.
No, not at all.
Interesting.
No, okay. They don't. Neither does the director.
Mm-hmm.
Now, common courtesy and protocol says that, yeah, you listen. And some commissioners have abused that
mm-hmm.
In the past as well as the present.
Mm-hmm.
Some have abused that authority, that seemed authority, which really doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
It's no different than having a hierarchy of management. You have a board of directors at the mm-hmm. top of a corporation. You got a president, you've got officers, and you got down to the employees.
Right.
There's not a president of a corporation in the world that would allow one of his board members to manage one of his staff.
Right.
It's never going to happen.
Right.
And all that will do will cause chaos. So
what is the purpose? And I know we're kind of diverting here a little bit, but I've got a question.
Sure.
What is the purpose then of the Board of Port Commissioners?
What's the purpose? Is to take the mission statement,
mm-hmm.
and
which you have to have,
you have
obviously,
to have and develop a plan.
Uh-huh.
As to how you, while you're in office, you've got 4 years.
Okay.
In your office, how are you going to implement a plan that will implement mm-hmm. the mission statement?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's saying, do I come up with a new business? Do we open a filling station out on the corner of Boat Basin Road and Lower Harbor Road?
Right.
There was once a time when that's a parking lot right now for the Best Western.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a time when I was in favor of doing that. Ports are very unique entities, even among special districts. We are expected to be entrepreneurial.
Hmm.
Counties and cities are not expected to be entrepreneurial.
Hmm.
They're discouraged from being in competition with maybe somebody that's in their jurisdiction.
Hmm.
You rarely will see a city that opens a gas station. the port has a gas station. Fills boats up. There's no reason it couldn't fill cars up.
Right. And there's no problem with that.
No. And we're expected to be entrepreneurial. And that means starting businesses, generating profits, and managing businesses. That's what ports do. If you think about it, it goes all the way back to the Greeks. Long ways away.
Wow. Okay. That's a lot of history.
Ports are focuses of economic interests. They're always on the coast.
Right. Which
from history, you've got people trading, bringing boats in with stuff, then they're taking boats out with stuff.
Right.
They're elements of trade. Economic development happens at a port when you're on the coast.
Makes sense. Absolutely.
It's history. It goes right. all the way back as far as you recorded history.
Right.
Still does.
Mm-hmm.
Where does the economic development happen? Port of Portland is a huge organization. They've got their own fire department, their own police department. Ports can have their own fire department. They can have their own police department. They can have their own hospital.
And
ports can do that.
So at the same time, when you're saying that ports can do that, you are also, it's also the port district.
Port district can do that, sure.
Okay.
It's the port district that counts.
Mm-hmm. That's so the entity.
The port district right now is the single largest district in Curry County other than the county itself.
Wow.
We have, 15,000 people living in the port district. You've got, 22,000 people in the whole county.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's a big number.
Yeah.
And the port district is a big, should be a big entity and be developing economic value for the residents of the district, which would be the bulk of the county.
Right.
So to me, it's pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a mission statement that has been voted on numerous times by numerous different commissions. We should have the current commission should be looking at that and say, okay, how do we do this? What are some ideas? Remembering that we can be, and we are encouraged to be entrepreneurial, which means we can start a business.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we can have an RV park, which we own.
Is that RV park that's down there, does that belong to the port?
Absolutely.
Okay.
The RV park belongs to the port. The kite field that's in the middle belongs to the port. So there's no reason that we could not build a Class A highfalutin RV park there where you charge $100 a night because it's probably the best location in the entire Oregon coast for an RV park.
Mm-hmm.
If I could wave a wand and say, what would I do to improve the finances of the port first would be to take on the RV park. That's the cash cow. That's where the profits are. And they're hidden right now, but they're there.
It's not a very attractive RV park.
That's a direct reflection of interest.
Hmm.
It is not. It's horrible. And
I wasn't going to be that.
I can't even imagine being entrepreneurial and having my product be that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You just can't do that.
And if that's the cash cow, that's.
It's pretty sad.
Yeah, that's not a.
So there've been a lot of. The history of bad decisions goes back a long ways.
Mm-hmm.
Russ Crabtree was a longtime executive director of the port. He was a friend of mine. He passed away about a year ago, 2 years ago. He had probably the best knack for finding funds of anybody that I've ever known. He could find government funds and cracks and crevices that were amazing. And he had his own strategy about how he went about doing that. His strategy was basically to borrow the funds that were needed.
Mm-hmm.
And then once the project was up and run and generating income, then go back to the legislature and plead for converting it to a grant.
And which means that the money that you had borrowed would be just turned into a gift, basically.
A gift.
Nice.
And he had been successful in doing that on a couple of occasions. So he had a reason to believe that that could happen.
So is that what happened down at the port? Is that what he did?
He did.
Yeah. Okay.
The commission was fully aware of it, although some will say that they didn't know that these were grants or these were loans. Mm-hmm. Every one of them had loan across the top rather than grant. So it's pretty hard to say that they weren't loans.
So when I got to town, I think, or shortly thereafter, there was a lot of hullabaloo about Russ. And he kind of got drummed out of port. Why did that happen?
Well, it happened because of personalities, primarily personalities. The chairman of the commission at that time, longtime chairman of the commission, the gentleman that I ran against, realized that he was going to take a hit because not knowing that these were loans and saying that he thought they were grants is not a real defense.
But he didn't really.
I don't know. I've not spoken with him directly about it.
But the paper said loan.
They're definitely loans.
Yeah, okay.
And there was about $5 or $6 million worth of loans.
Okay. So, but I don't understand what the problem is. So we know that these loans are there, and Russ Crabtree had a plan of going and trying to get. Right. So what tripped that up? What was the?
Well, I think that became a personality issue. Between Lloyd, frankly, and Russ.
Okay,
that was the major issue. Okay. And the other commissioners, frankly, felt a little bit. I'm embarrassed because that's a pretty big number.
Mm-hmm. What was it? How much?
I think it's $5 or $6 million.
Yeah.
Now, the reality of life is that that's not a very big number.
Yeah.
The port has 43 acres of waterfront property. The most valuable property, arguably, in Curry County that could be sold.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because it's right on the water.
Right.
We had a study done at one time to do a market value of what that's worth. And conservatively, the value of the land is somewhere in the neighborhood of $35
million. Hmm.
Okay, the 43 acres that's right around the water is $40 to $43 million. This was about 5 or 6 years ago.
So it's only gone up from there.
Yeah, it can't go down. If you were to open that up for sale, we actually had some bids on pieces of property, some of which I can't talk about because they came to us through executive session.
Mm-hmm.
But I know for a fact that there have been offers to buy certain pieces of property.
Mm-hmm.
Now, no one wants to sell the public trust.
Mm-hmm.
And this property that's owned by the public, particularly something that's held as such value as the port is,
right?
You don't do that willy-nilly. You better have a good reason for doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, selling the RV park was, I thought, a great idea. I think we could have gotten $8 to $10 million for the RV park and the kite field. It would have turned into a very nice facility. And the reality is, it doesn't matter who owns it; it matters who controls its activities.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's in the port. District, we could have written a sale contract that would control that there would always be an RV park there, and there would always be a park that's open to the public.
Ah, okay. So because those are the things that the citizens here really, they're really.
Well, you do that when you write the deal.
Right.
Okay. Now, I couldn't get any traction for that at all, to even consider selling the RV park. But it's clear there's no interest there.
Mm-hmm.
The commission has no interest in the RV park because all you got to do is drive down there and look at it.
Right.
You would see that there's clearly no interest there. So,
which doesn't really make sense.
No.
But
it does tell you that whoever becomes the executive director needs to be an entrepreneur, needs to know how to take an opportunity and convert it into a business that generates a profit. That's what we need, and that's what our mission statement says we ought to be doing. So that's We got to find that kind of a person.
So I'm just trying to kind of tie up the end with Russ. So what happened then? He resigned. Okay.
He resigned and he actually went to work as the executive director for the Talawa tribe, Smith River.
So I think he's been really painted with a not accurate brush because
there are a lot of bad rumors and stuff. It's like anybody who's in the public eye, mm-hmm. you've got some people that like you and some mm-hmm. people that just dislike you.
Right.
And there were those who just disliked Russ. He did hold a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because his commission let him do whatever he really wanted to do.
Right.
There were several things that had I been a commissioner when he was the director, I would have advocated to do something different in mm-hmm. a board meeting.
Mm-hmm.
One quick example was that Russ felt that he could save money by being his own general contractor.
Mm-hmm.
So when they built the green building and when they built some of the retail center, he hired the people that did that, mm-hmm. not contracted it out.
Mm-hmm.
So he hired the individual carpenters and the plumbers. At one time, there was 41 employees of the port.
Wow.
Okay. Now, that's a big number.
Yeah.
And you try to see where that's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And it's paid for by loans.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is that we owe about $900,000 on the green building, and it's worth, 5 years ago,
$350,000.
Wow. So that tells you how you get into trouble.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. You've got this big mountain of debt. There's no way to turn that into grants after the fact without having the ground laid like Crabtree could have had it laid.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, a lot of people felt that Russ, you know, walked away from it and left the port in a pretty poor condition.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a poor condition. There's no doubt about it, but it's not fair to blame it all on Russ.
Mm-hmm.
So there's other people that should take some of that. But that's the reality.
So is that about when you joined the commissioners?
I ran for office in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
I ran for position 2, which was Lloyd Whaley's seat at that time. It was a very contentious election. I think 70% of the vote actually voted, 70% of the eligible voters actually got out and voted in that
election.
So it's a high number.
Yeah, it is.
And we both spent too much money on the mm-hmm. election, but the reality is that I felt pretty strongly that change needed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And Lloyd felt that it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a pretty clear and simple
election.
Isn't
that always the way it is, right? Somebody wants change, the other person says no.
Pretty straightforward.
Wow.
You know, that's what boiled down to.
Yeah, so. Interesting.
So I was fortunate to be elected, mm-hmm. and I was elected the treasurer, secretary treasurer of the board, and I served in
secretary
that.
Secretary and treasurer? Right. With, okay. Mm-hmm.
And I served in that capacity for 2 terms.
Okay.
I felt that I had a mandate. I wanted to see if I had a mandate for a 3rd term, and I found out very quickly I didn't.
Well, you were running on annexation, though, weren't you?
That's what the mandate should have been, in my view.
Yeah. But, so tell me what about the annexation, because that to me is just fascinating.
Well, I looked at a lot of things, and I still do look at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was unable to communicate to the public the benefits. The benefits are many.
And what we're talking about is annexing
the city of Brookings and the port district together.
Okay.
Okay. One thing that happens is we were having a lot of crime issues back in 2006 and 7, 8. We couldn't afford security, you know, the kind of security that you need for that kind of crime. So annexation would have given us the City of Brookings Police Department.
And what kind of crime are we talking about?
Oh, breaking and entering, drug crimes, drug-related crimes.
And down at the port, generally, is that what you...
That's where people get it.
Got it.
A lot of theft and burglary and
okay.
that type of thing.
Right.
So
it would have given the port use of the police department, which
that would have been part of it.
Okay. Yeah.
Planning.
Which is notably a great police department.
It's a great police department.
Yeah, it is.
And they have a great planning department.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One of the problems in Harbor, and it's been a chronic problem, is that there has never been any planning. The county is responsible for planning in Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
So the width of streets, the location of streets and roads and sewers basically is pretty much left up to whatever you put in the ground.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, you know, there is no planning and hasn't been for 30 years or more.
Now, I got to tell you that I think that that has to do with the character of the people in this area. Yeah. A lot of them don't want to plan.
There's no question about it. There is no question about it. And they don't want the funds, the tax rates that are required.
That's right.
To run with that.
That's right.
And I think that's what obviously killed my try for a third term is because I said, I'm going to push for this.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that we need. We need to bite this bullet and move beyond it and become a real community.
Mm-hmm.
A community that consists, and call it Harbor Brookings or call it Brookings Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
It's one community.
Right.
We already are one community.
Yeah.
You know?
So if you're talking about the Port District and the city kind of becoming one thing, then the reality is that that's Pistol River to the border becoming with
coming
Brookings.
Into the city.
Yeah. That's wow. Great. Wow.
So, you know, and I was willing to back off of that even and just say the 43 acres that are down here at the port.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do that.
Mm-hmm.
I still feel that one day, before I pass on, we will see a movement toward annexation, and it needs to happen, in my view. Now, I'll get shot probably walking out of here.
I'll try to guard you. yeah, but, I know.
So, at least I
But
knew
visionaries always have that problem.
I knew when my mandate wasn't there.
Yes,
And it clearly wasn't. There was no interest in that at all. So, but...
So when you joined the Port Commission back in 2007, what was sort of the state of the
same thing?
Was
revenue and debt,
mm-hmm.
and how do we handle the debt?
And I would assume that there was a lot of debt, and
that was $5 or $6 million to IFA.
Okay,
which is
and IFA is
the state's. In those days, it was called OECDD or something, mm-hmm. Oregon Economic Development.
Mm-hmm.
They changed the name to IFA, Oregon Infrastructure Refinance.
Okay.
But that's basically where special districts borrow money for infrastructure.
Okay.
Oh, and just a last word about annexation.
Mm-hmm.
By being a part of the city, the port could have developed urban renewal districts. More than one.
Hmm.
And an urban renewal district is a magic way districts create revenue streams.
How is that?
Incremental tax. If an urban renewal district is founded, City of Brookings has one right now.
Mm-hmm.
The tax rate that's in place at the time the district is founded stays in place, so those who are receiving those taxes continue to receive them.
Mm-hmm.
But any tax increases above that go to the district.
Oh.
Typically, they have a 25-year life.
Uh-huh.
So if you've got a tax rate that's very low when the district is created, any incremental taxes go right directly to the district, which can be used for infrastructure, can be used for Christmas tree lights, can be used for street lights, can be used for for all of those things.
Right.
And it's nobody pays any more.
Hmm.
They don't pay more taxes.
Right.
It's just incremental financing of those taxes. So,
interesting. Wow. Okay.
It's that you can't do as a port.
Right.
You've got to be a city or you've got to be a county to do it.
Okay. Now, another thing that I had heard is that as an entity, a port district can actually have its own hospital.
It can.
That's also
just like it can have
huge.
Its own filling station.
Wow.
So it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know you know, it would be interesting to test the water with that, because the federal government still has something to say about where siting occurs for hospitals because of, you know, the club they wield with Medicare and Medicaid.
Exactly.
But there isn't the localized politics involved. Okay, you know, that there has been with the Curry Community Hospital.
Right.
So I don't know, but that's what I'm saying to you. Ports are unique entities. They can do things that other entities cannot do. In fact, they're chartered to do those things. They're chartered to be in business. They're chartered to do the things that...
So if there was an annexation, would they still have that ability then?
Yeah.
So it would be kind of a hybrid of a port district and the city?
What would make that happen would be to take the 43 acres that are down at the port and annex that to the city, leaving the port district as it is right now. So I'd have to remember. I actually did some legal work on that. I had some people do some work on what that would look like if we could annex part of the district.
Right.
And of course, the city was anxious to have that happen. Oh, I know what the other element was, and then I won't go any further with it, is water. You know, you remember that wasn't too many years ago when we had Harbor was starving for water.
I'm pretty sure it was last year, or maybe the year before.
pulling water out of the
salt
fire department truck.
Water. Yes, exactly.
So, well, Harbor Water District doesn't have the funds to exploit a totally independent third water source.
Right.
The city of Brookings does.
Mm-hmm.
And it already has the water rights up the river to do that.
Yep.
And at one time, when I was speaking with them, we actually had, if the Harbor Water had agreed to it, we had an agreement where the city of Brookings would supply water across the river when it was needed.
Right.
They'd put a pipe in and supply water to Harbor when it was needed.
Right.
So obviously, if they're a part of the same community, then it's your charter. You've got to do it.
Right.
You know, it's not just I'm going to be a good guy. And
yeah, exactly.
It, so. But I'm giving you all my old reasons that failed.
Oh, no, but it's really interesting stuff, though.
Died.
It really is interesting. And, you know, I think that with everything, there's a time for an idea when it's actually time for it to happen, and it just hasn't been that time yet.
I should tell you about my time when I tried to get a revenue bond passed.
Oh, tell me. What? What happened?
2008, I think.
Uh-huh.
I thought, well, let me see if I can get a revenue bond passed, because we got to get some revenue in here.
And what is a revenue bond? What does that look?
It's a municipal bond that is paid for by revenues coming in from the port.
Okay.
Okay. Multiple revenue streams, whether it be from mortgage or property rentals or RV park or whatever, can pay for a municipal bond. And I wanted to borrow enough, basically it's a loan, to refinance the $5 or $6 million we owed the state.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If we could get rid of that and then have a reasonable rate coming from some revenue stream, And I had targeted the RV park revenue stream, then it would be a relatively painless problem. We wouldn't have to worry about making that payment that we do now, and we could focus on other things. So a revenue bond seemed to be a good idea. Well, the commission felt that it was a good idea for you to go do Rutherford. We don't want to go out and talk to anybody about a revenue bond.
Because if somebody was going to get strung up, it was going to be you.
So I, being an Irishman again, being pretty dumb, I went out and did my thing before the Chamber of Commerce.
And it didn't work out.
No. 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 I string that up amongst many of my...
Well, you're a visionary. You're a man before his time. What can we say? So you were a port commissioner then for like 8 years.
8 years.
And what do you think were some of the biggest challenges that you faced? And what was some of the biggest things that actually got accomplished?
Well, I think what happened was an attitude change, probably the biggest thing, because once we started exploiting festivals. We really started in 2007, 2008. The Kite Festival had been around for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
The Art Festival at that time had been around for quite a while. But it was my goal, and you could see the benefits to it. One is we needed to get revenue coming from the retail centers, and we wanted to build more retail centers, and we wanted to get top dollar rent. So when I was there, we raised the rates to $1.04 a foot. Now, that's pretty spendy for Brookings.
Okay.
That's right up there, and that was 5 years ago.
Okay.
That's right up there at the top. Well, to do that, you need to have people coming in buying things.
Yes.
They've got to be able to show themselves that, you know, that
right.
I can pay that rent because the port's going to have festivals, and they're going to bring in these people from yes. all over the Western right. world here, and they're right. going to buy candy in my candy store,
right.
or they're going
exactly.
to buy tackle.
Or ice cream, or, yeah.
And for about 5 years, actually for 13 years, we ran the Derby.
Mm-hmm. And that was an enormous festival. I mean, there were thousands of people who came to town for that.
The largest one we had 800 fishermen, but they generally always had family. The RV parks were all jammed up all the way up to Port Orford. And all the way through Crescent City, the RV parks were full.
Now, you what do you estimate a fisherman who was here for?
Well, there are numbers that you can verify what the economic impact of an out-of-state fisherman coming in to fish in the ocean is. $400 a day is what they spend.
Wow! Wow! Okay?
Just for the fisherman fishing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, with his wife, kids. Buying at the retail center, buying stuff around town, restaurant, eating. It's not unthinkable to look at $1,000 a day for out-of-town visitors to come in and spend. Well, if you've got 800 fishermen, you know, do the math.
Yeah.
You can see that with any kind of a multiplier, you can see $8 to $15 million worth of economic value being poured into a community over the Labor Day weekend.
Yes. Yes,
which
is exactly what you need going into the winter.
Prior to the Derby, there was nothing going on Labor Day weekend.
Hmm.
So that was $10 to $15 million every year that could be dumped into the community, and it was very valuable. Mm-hmm. Well, what it did was it made the demand for property at the port go up.
Mm-hmm.
So our revenue streams went up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and there still are potentially very successful festivals. Those are a natural.
Right.
Everybody enjoys them.
Right.
Residents enjoy them.
Oh,
we
yeah.
used to have little old ladies and little old men. You know, I consider myself that now. Going down and sitting in front of the weigh stand just to watch fish coming in being weighed.
I got to tell you, I was there with my camera, you know.
People love it.
It is just really intriguing. It just is.
And
this big line that stretched way back to the loading dock.
Sunday's dinner.
Yeah. I mean, it was just, wow. Wow. And I remember when the Festival of the Art was down there, because I was on that committee for a while.
Huge deal.
Oh, my goodness. Because it was a juried art show.
Huge
so
deal.
You had people who actually had to, you know, submit to get in there.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, there were thousands of people. The artwork was incredible. And
unfortunately, you know,
personalities. Yep, exactly.
There still could be a wonderful place for an art festival.
Right.
My goal as a commissioner was to have one major festival per month.
Ah. Yeah.
And there's no reason that this port couldn't support one festival per month.
Right.
And in doing that, that would enable, I think, a financial base to double the size of the retail center by moving out toward the green building.
Yep.
And you could put two more buildings out there.
Yep.
And could fill them up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way you're going to grow the port, is you got to get the revenue streams coming in.
Right.
Festivals are one way.
Right.
Getting a fishing season.
Yes.
You have to have a fishing season.
Right.
Today, the PFMC opened its meetings, its fall meetings today, that's going to determine how many salmon we're going to be able to catch this year, if any.
Wow.
There, that's in Santa Rosa.
Uh-huh.
If we don't have somebody down there lobbying for us, we're really, really not very smart.
So if somebody from our area was down there lobbying, what they could get things changed?
Well, yeah, a good example
changed?
Of that is the Salmon Derby occurs on Labor Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
The fishing season typically ends the last week, last day of August.
Oh.
That's the season that ends. The accounting season for salmon ends the last day of August. So for us to have a derby, they had to agree to extend the season until the Monday past Labor Day, whenever that was.
Okay.
And for 13 years, they did it. I went down and lobbied them almost every year.
So was that a decision that they made on a yearly basis?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's... And some years, they had one year where we didn't have any fish, so they couldn't open the season.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm not convinced we couldn't have worked our bubble fishery into something to be done with that.
What's the bubble thing?
That's where there's a special season late in the fall for the unique run of fish that come up the Chetco River.
Okay.
And you can fish in the ocean to a mile radius or 2 mile radius around the whistle buoy for that fish.
Okay.
And they're typically trophy-sized salmon.
Okay.
The Chetco has a very large salmon.
Right.
So, but we would lobby. We're fortunate that we have one guy by the name of Richard Heap, who happens to be on the Salmon Technical Committee.
Mm-hmm.
He can't lobby.
Mm.
But he's there to make sure that the numbers add up correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, he represents... not Brookings, not us, but he represents Oregon in the setting of those seasons. But there's nothing like having a poor-mouthed port commissioner who's down on his luck trying to get some revenue to come into his community over Labor Day weekend to pull a few heartstrings and get it to happen. And it happened. And it happened every year.
Huh.
So if we're not doing that, we're not going to have our chances of having a late season are very difficult. I don't know if we are or not, but that's
revenue
streams.
One of the things that the commissioners should be addressing.
That they should be doing it.
They should be doing that. Yeah,
that's what they should be doing. Mm-hmm. In my view, that's a commissioner's job.
Mm-hmm.
You can speak as the commission.
Mm-hmm.
As the top level group. So
right. But and it's kind of a no-brainer, really. I mean, you know, that
really
Slammin' Salmon was the thing that happened. I mean, it was the biggest.
It still could be.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of issues like that.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, focusing on developing the RV park, even if you have to do it over a 3-year plan, how do we build this RV park into where it already has a large demand just because of where it's located.
Right.
Okay. Everything that could be wrong with an RV park is wrong with that RV park.
Really?
The traffic flow is bad. The traffic flow is horrible both ways around it.
Yeah.
The electricity is bad.
The
restrooms are bad. There's very little Wi-Fi services out there. And RVers have to have their Wi-Fi.
Right.
You know,
right.
So, just about everything has got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those need to be fixed if you're going to see the potential
in
that RV park. If we're unwilling to do that, then we should sell it. We should sell it and we should pay off the debt with the proceeds of it. I'm convinced we could pay off the debt, probably have a couple $1 million to put in the bank by selling off the RV park.
Would there be an alternative like leasing it or something if we found somebody who, you know?
But you won't see the bundle of cash.
No, of course not. Right.
But in one way, it makes a lot of sense if you think about it. We're chartered to be entrepreneurial, but we can't be good at everything.
Right.
We can't be really good harbor masters and really good RV park managers and really good property managers and
right.
really good mortgage managers.
It just takes too many. Yeah.
We could lease out some of those functions.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer to your question, mm-hmm. yes, most of the ports in California are managed under contract.
Hmm.
Alamar Corporation manages most of the ports.
Hmm.
So we could, it's called facility management. You could easily do that. I don't know about RV parks, but I'm certain you could find a manager for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just thinking out of the box.
What right.
How do we do this? It's not.
And kind of, we do kind of have to start thinking out of the box a little bit, right? Because we're in the box and
we're not getting anywhere right
we're
now.
We're not getting anywhere.
And unless the tourist season is already set.
Mm-hmm.
Fishing season, assuming there will be one, is done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not a lot of advertising we can do now that's going to change people's mind.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have any fishing last year. Probably we lost half of our fishermen because they went somewhere to fish.
Sure.
And they probably made their plans to go back up there.
Exactly. Because they knew they could count on that.
They can get fishing
yeah,
in.
Right.
So we got to get them back.
Yeah. And how it's always so much harder to get somebody back after you lose.
You've got to figure out a way
yeah.
to get them back.
Yeah.
Now, the port could play a big role in that.
Mm-hmm.
How do we rejuvenate tourism?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do we bring the people over from the valley? We at one time Ted had a series of TV commercials that we ran in the valley that were very helpful because people could relate to them. You know, they could
yeah.
they could see people sailing in the river out
right,
there.
We right, right, and it makes a difference.
The,
right,
fishing. But it's not hopeless.
No.
After all, we're dealing with the most beautiful product on the coast of Oregon,
yeah,
in my
gorgeous.
View.
It's absolutely gorgeous. I know.
This port has more potential than anything that I've seen up and down the coast. And we just have to make it happen.
So on that note, which I you know, I'm shocked an hour has gone by again. I'm shocked. But I want to thank you really so much for coming in and talking. I'd like to have you come back, really, because I think we just barely scratched the surface, and I really think that this stuff is important. If we're going to move forward,
I'd be happy to do it. But I feel very strongly about it. You know, I haven't lost my love of the port. So.
I love it. Thank you, Jim Rutherford.
Oh, thank you.
And you have been listening to Our Community. I've been talking to former Port Commissioner Jim Rutherford. I'm Candace Michelle.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.
For music credits for the preceding show, go to kciw.org/credits.